I had this sort of moment, a spark of inspiration several years ago when there was an exhibition of Blake's work in London at the Tate Gallery. And I went around it, and I hadn't realized what an unusual man he was, what a radical thinker, and a kind of strange man to live next door to was the way I looked at it. And I started thinking, wow, what must it have been like to be the neighbor of William Blake? You know, this is a man who supposedly was discovered in his back garden with his wife, naked and reciting Paradise Lost to each other. And he used to walk down the street and sing to himself and said he saw angels in trees, and he would be in conversation with his long-dead brother all the time. And just, I thought, wow, he is really unusual. And I think if he had lived now, he would still be unusual and misunderstood. And I thought, I'd like to try to understand a bit more about him. So the best way for a writer to do that is to make him into a character in one of her books. So that's what I did.
Was it daunting to undertake writing about Blake, who was this really eccentric, kind of out there kind of person?
Absolutely. And I went into this thinking I was going to understand him better at the end. And I think at the end I understand him less. I appreciate him more, though. I think I feel like I know more what he was like as a man, as a person, like as a person you would live next door to. And in some ways I think that's better than understanding his poetry or his prose or his art. You can accept the mystery of him and the fact that he was a real one-of-a-kind thinker. So I found it was daunting at first because the sheer amount of work, of stuff that's been written about him already. And a lot of people, a lot of scholars out there who just take him as their own and love him and are very fierce about it and have very, very vivid ideas about what he was trying to get across. And that was when I started reading all that, I thought, okay, I don't want to write a biographical novel about him. We don't need that. What we need is a more impressionistic piece in which he is one player among many. So that was one of my first decisions, was that he wouldn't be the main character. He would have the main underlying tone of the book, but not be actually the main character. Instead, I decided that the main characters would be children who are growing up. Because more than anything, even more than this being a book about Blake, it's really a book about growing up, moving from childhood to adulthood.
I was going to say, all of your books deal in part with the transition of, a lot of times, women from childhood to adulthood. There is, of course, Greet and Girl with a Pearl Earring, you've become so famous for. And there is Maisie and Maggie, as far as the girls go, and Jim, and Burning Bright. What about that time in life appeals to you as a writer?
Well, it's funny that because it's funny about being a writer, you know, because I work instinctively. So it wasn't like when I started writing this, I thought, oh, I'm writing about kids and writing about growing up. It's only retrospectively I look back and think, oh yeah, I do seem to write about this a lot. And so I've wondered myself, what is it that appeals to me? And I think what it is that children, we all have gone through growing up. You know, I think partly it's a very universal theme, because anybody who's over the age of, say, 15 is basically old enough to really have gone through it. So it's a universalizing trait, a characteristic we all know. But I also think I like to write books about change. I think that a book is like a journey, that a character, you start with a character as a reader, you follow these characters through a journey where they go from something, and they, by the end they're changed into something else. And that is most acute, I think, when you're an adolescent and you're moving into becoming an adult. And so I think I just gravitate quite naturally to that. I think grown-ups can change and do change, but they're not as prone to change as children. And so if I'm attracted and drawn to change, then it tends to be to younger people.
One of the things that seems to affect change in your novels quite often is this idea of loss. There's lots of loss in all of your books. In your first book, The Virgin Blue, there's this very tragic death of a young girl. And then in The Lady and the Unicorn, it's a different kind of loss. It's a kind of a loss of freedom, of mobility. Why has that become such a driving force in your books?
I think it probably stems from my own childhood, because my mother died when I was 8. And I think that that probably has affected me more than anything else in my life. And it wasn't a conscious, again, it wasn't a conscious decision to write about loss, but I found it coming up again and again. And I think in a way, it's my own way of working through my mortality and trying to figure out the meaning. I know it sounds huge and almost cliche in its bigness, but it's like by writing out the loss, I'm trying to work out what my meaning of a life that is cut off eventually. You know, we all die, and what does that mean? How do we make meaning out of our own lives with that in mind?
Girl with a Pearl Earring was your first big blockbuster. I kind of wonder what success of that, you know, it's turned into an Oscar-winning movie and sold millions of copies. I mean, what's that success been like for you?
it's been great in that it has, it's opened doors for me, and there are certainly, I've built up a readership who are always eagerly awaiting my next book coming out, which is so nice. I have to say, I feel incredibly lucky to have that. But it's kind of a two-edged sword as well, because whatever I write is always compared to it. And it's very difficult because people love that book, and so they say, oh, you know, Chevalier's written a book set in a cemetery. It's good, but it's not Girl with a Pearl Earring. Or, oh, Chevalier's done another artist. And it's just that it's that kind of touchstone to my career that I will always be answering to. And in part, I'm at least it's that book. I'm really glad because I do love that book myself. I feel very proud of it, and I also adore Vermeer, and I still love that painting. You know, I look at it every day. It's still hanging up in my office, and I still find new and different things about it. So I don't regret that that's the work I'm known by, but it does mean that it's always in the back of my head that I, you know, it's very hard to get away from that book. So it'll always be a part of me, for good and for better and worse.
Do you ever think you'll undertake writing a novel about another solely visual artist like Vermeer?
I don't know. I work instinctively, and I get ideas. I don't go looking for them, so I don't sort of look through art books and go to galleries and think, oh, where's an artist that I could write about? I do feel like I'm moving away from art a little bit in that. The next idea I have for the book I'm working on now is not about art at all. It's or literature. It's about fossils of all things, and it's about a woman named Mary Anning who lived in a little town on the southern coast of England in the 19th century, and she was a working class woman who collected fossils for a living and sold them to people, and she discovered some of the first dinosaur fossils in England. And I'm writing a novel about her. And that's about as different as you can get from Vermeer or Blake.